What's going on, everybody? We are here, season 3, episode 28. We are in a new beautiful spot, new location. I want everybody to like, subscribe, and share before we get started. And today, I have a very special guest. I am excited about this guest. We are, you know, we've been having like a run of wonderful guests. Today, we have Mr. David Winkler here of the 4th District. He is running for U.S. Congress. Want to say hello to the people, Dave?
Hey, I want to, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm absolutely excited. I think that, you know, it's been a long time coming for me to come on your show. I think we met at the Trump rally.
The Trump rally for the first time.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
we've been planning this. So, like, you know, schedules are busy and, you know, so we're trying to make it happen. Yeah. And we finally about to get the people something, you know, to hear something good for them to listen to and they get to know who you are a little bit more. Yeah. Real quick, because I said the 4th district, when we talk about these districts, some people don't, you know, they're novice to, you want a couple of places of what that consists of?
So, I mean, the district consists of predominantly all of Montgomery County.
Okay.
And then about a, you know, a quarter of Berks County.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a pretty big district.
Right.
I mean, we're the number 4 in the state when it comes to, you know, total voter registration when it comes to Republicans. So we dang near have 200,000 Republicans.
That is huge.
Yeah.
See, a lot of people didn't know that until now. So you got that on What You Scared to Say podcast. Yeah. Look, see? All right, that's cool. I usually don't title my in-house episodes, all right? Mm-hmm. I saved them for my live shows, but I feel like I got special guests here today. So, like, today, like, I purposely named it the Spartans of Our Time, right?
Mm.
So the reason why I did this, because, of course, you know, I did my little research and I had to find out, you know, who's Dave Winkler. Mm. I had to, you know, do some digging and do some history. So, like, I seen a lot about your upbringing and things of that nature. And that's going to actually tailor into some of the questions that I got.
Okay.
And I got some good questions for you. All right. So I hope
I'm ready.
All right. So I seen a little bit of how you was, you know, your upbringing, that you was brought up in foster care.
Yeah.
The normal person, you know, who goes through systems like that, because I don't hear all the time about great things about, you know, that that whole process and things like that. Why? What separates you? Why didn't you have victim mentality, you know, going through something like that, going through foster care? Like, how was that experience for you? You know, was it a great experience? Was it, you know, was it a bad experience?
You know, just going through it real quick is, you know, I was pretty much born in, you know, how do I put this, is my mother was, you know, a drug addict and all that. So when I was born, I was put in the NICU for, you know, a few weeks. And right from there, I was put into the foster care system. So I was very young enough not to really understand the foster care system because I'm just, you know, born into it.
Right.
But, you know, I think the reason why I don't have a victim mentality in another thing is, you know, God blessed me enough to be able to get adopted out of that system and moved out of that system at a very young age, which I think it had a lot to do with, you know, the adopted parents' mentality. They were very much hard chargers. Dad was, you know, 2 PhDs, huge into education. Huge on conservative family values, discipline. He said when I was growing up, my only job was to, you know, keep my head in the books. It wasn't to party. It wasn't to get out there and do anything else. That education was the key to, you know, whatever I wanted to do in life.
Okay.
So, you know, I adopted those set of values at a very young age. And, you know, as you probably saw later on, the military service, law enforcement, everything else.
Right.
So, yeah.
I think that's pretty dope. And the reason why I wanted to talk about and why I named it, you know, the Spartans of our time, and because I've been talking about this on my shows that when this generation, when we're long and gone, who are the great men are going to be written about, you know, once we're gone? We grew up reading about great men, you know, accomplishing great things. And I just don't feel that. I feel we have some innovative people, and I'm going to get to that, you know, as well. But when I read your background, when I see your background, you've lived an impressive life. And so the reason why I love that y'all are on this show is because we see people running for Congress. We see people running for different things. And it's like, who are these people, though? Mm-hmm. Because I want people to feel like when I follow somebody, whether I'm voting for them or whether no matter, I want to be feel like I can run through a brick wall for that person. Yeah. I want to believe in that person.
Yeah.
What are your principles? What are you about? What's your background? You talk about discipline. You talk about core values. You talk about, you know, just not having a victim mentality in life. So I felt like I just wanted to inspire people to see that. And if they can feel that, this is why I will vote for this person. Yeah. This is why, you know, I like how he move. I like how he think, right?
Yeah, and you know, I would actually say it the opposite. It's I would run through brick walls for all Americans. It's the opposite. It's not, you know, necessarily. It goes back to that adage of, it's what can I do for you? It's not what you can do for me. It's I have that servant leadership mentality.
Right.
You know, a lot of our government's got it backwards nowadays. Our government's about. They think that we work for them as we the people.
Right.
And they have it backwards. And that's where I'm trying to get into Congress so that I can switch that mentality and say, no, government, it's the people. We the people, not we the government. And we need to switch that mentality back to what can we do to help instead of running off to special interest PACs and greed, money, all that kind of stuff. We gotta put real leadership in DC.
Okay. I'm glad you spoke about that. Serving the people, running through brick walls for people, right? Yeah. So this is going to be one for you right here, right? I look at your military background, right? And you was a part of Operation Iraqi Freedom, and that was dealing with Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
And you was also a part of Operation Enduring Freedom, and that was dealing with the Taliban.
Yeah.
So right now in America, we have some things going on, you know, flag burning, people upset about this or that. But this is the thing, right? The American people are speaking, but then we have a government who sometimes they overlook what the complaints are. And I'm gonna make it make sense for you, right? I look at the reason why I brought up your military background is because you have seen some things in life.
Yeah.
You have seen, I like getting, you know, the expertise from somebody who's seen it firsthand, seen things I haven't seen. You know, you've seen death, you've seen the ugly part of life, you've seen war, you've seen your friends or people used to go and they came home and they may have, you know, unfortunately, they took their lives here. So you've seen some ugly things.
Yeah.
People sometimes they don't grasp that, right? So help me understand this. Educate me. Educate the people, right? We have people here where they are mad at Israel. Israel isn't popular right now in America, right? Mm-hmm. But then you have a government who says Israel's our allies. And you have people who are with the Israel-Palestine conflict. And I think that we all in accordance that, yes, Hamas are the bad guys, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that's ever the debate.
Yeah.
But then when you hear our elected officials talk, that's what their sticking point is. Hamas, Hamas, Hamas. Well, people are not upset about that. Mm-hmm. So I want you to educate me if you can, because what people are getting mad at is when they see these videos, they see the ugly side of war. Mm-hmm. They seen what you have seen, right? Mm-hmm. They see children getting bombed. They see children with their faces blown off and limbs and women and, you know, people being sexually assaulted. They hearing about these things and these are civilians.
Yeah.
This is not Hamas.
Yeah.
But then we hear Israel's our allies. And if we say anything bad about Israel, then we're anti-Semitic. We're not allowed to critique them, say anything wrong. But this is what our elected officials, we have to overlook all of that.
Yeah.
So could you educate me? What are we missing? Why shouldn't Americans feel the way they feel right now when towards Israel right now?
Well, first of all, I'm never going to tell people that they can't feel a certain way because, you know, I respect the First Amendment, you know, and in any sense, you know, I don't mind either side of the argument. I mean, I went to UPenn, if you remember, and I actually spoke with both sides, the Jewish community as well as the encampment. And what they were speaking about there was divestment from funding. They didn't want the colleges giving money off to the military industrial complex. That is a conversation I'm willing to have with them because I would be in agreement for that. But in the sense of Hamas and all that, I like to remind the people that I fought in the beginning of the war. And a lot of this reminds me of the Battle of Haditha. So when you go back to that battle and you actually research and understand what happened to the United States Marine Corps in the Battle of Haditha, they were set up by, you know, the PSYOP, machine of the Al Qaeda network, where they set them up as making them look like they went into a village and you know, raped and killed people and all that stuff. But it turns out that never happened. Okay. The Marines ended up getting in trouble for that. But later on, they ended up getting acquitted of all those charges because they realized. And so what I would tell you is, do not trust anything that comes out from this Hamas network or what goes on over there in the sense of Gaza, whatever. This is the way that they play. These terrorist organizations, they play to the bleeding heart syndromes of the West.
Okay.
And they play and feed upon the emotions because the liberal left, that's as you probably well know,
right.
They're not logical. They're emotional when it comes to voting habits, when it comes to creating policy legislation and all that. And so the enemy is absolutely playing to that and saying, hey, Israel, you're creating a genocide. I would never be one of those that says, hey, I will look into it to see if their complaints are valid. But I'm very skeptical just because Hamas is no different to me than ISIS, than Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and they all play the same games. Okay. If there's a genocide happening, I will look into it. But I will tell you right now that I am absolutely pure Israel. I'm on the side of Israel because right. I understand the enemy that they're facing because I have faced
right.
face to face. I have seen... You know, them strap bombs to women and children. I've seen them, you know, order kids to go out, dig holes and put bombs inside them. I've seen, you know, the dead man switches in the cars where people were made to drive themselves to their death because if they ever stood up out of their car, they would blow up.
Right.
So there's very, like, you can't negotiate. You can't sit down with the mentality of that. And I will tell you, their whole goal is to destroy the West. And, right. and people in America have to understand, it's, you know, like, we see those... the pro-LGBTQ for Palestine. Well, what they don't understand is literally like the Israeli prime minister said, it's like sticking chickens in, like, you know, going to KFC. Like, right. you don't understand. Like, they see you as an infidel. They see you as something that they want to destroy. And so I find it very hard to have these conversations with the opposite side right. because they don't have the life experience that I have to fight this kind of terrorism face-to-face. Right. And understanding their culture. So
that's exactly why I wanted to ask, because, yeah. you know, we often talk to people who have no experience. Yeah. They haven't been over there. They haven't seen certain yeah. things. So these are tough conversations to have. But why not talk to people who've been in combat? Because, you know, you've been over there
yeah.
in that region. You know, you got friends, I'm pretty sure, that's still over yeah. there in the regions. So you see things or understand things from a different yeah. standpoint. And these are things that I feel Americans need to hear,
yeah.
you know, so just the other side of it. So I think that was important. And I yeah. appreciate you sharing that and yeah. being willing to share, you know, your experiences with us.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was important. So to something a little fun before I go into something else, right? When we follow each other on social media. Yeah. And so sometimes we get a good laugh. Sometimes we get reactions from people, whether yeah. they follow us or don't or whatever. So I saw a little exchange between you and Roland Martin.
Yeah.
What was that about? Like, what was that whole exchange thing? Because I just thought it was in it, you know, it was like, oh, okay. Like,
yeah. So, you know, I pay attention to, you know, the Black Twitterverse right. And a lot of the beefs or internal struggles going on right now.
Right.
And a lot of it was because he was annoying me by going after Tariq Nasheed.
Okay.
And the FBA and the as well as, you know, the ADOS movement and stuff while okay. he's over there tap dancing for the Democrat Party.
Right.
And Roland Martin's just very insincere person to me. So. Mm. I forgot exactly what the exchange was that I went after Roland Martin, but I, you yeah. know, he came after me.
Right, right.
And I told him straight out because he was like, who are you? And I was yeah. like, well, this is my resume. This is who I am.
Right.
And I'm coming to go serve in Congress. Yeah. And he, because one of the things, he laughed at the BCF endorsement of, okay. you know, Byron Donald's people.
Yes.
And he doesn't like Byron and all them, but ultimately, it's just I'm tired of the Black liberal left not understanding the Black community is not monolithic,
right.
that we all have different, you know, outlooks, different viewpoints, different whatever. And that needs to be respected. Mm. And regardless if you sit on the left or the right, that should be OK in America, in Black America. That's what our, you know, forefathers or the ones that went through, you know, Jim Crow,
right.
went through, you know, the civil rights era, even going all the way back to slavery. They fought for us to get here to be right. on whatever side of the aisle that you want.
Right.
And it benefits us to be on both sides of the aisle because we're having conversations from both sides.
Right.
If you only are on one side, that's right. the only, you know,
how can we ever get yeah. anything done if we all just, you know, automatically we just think one way, we yeah. just vote one way, and you're shamed if you want to vote or think about or hear somebody else about yeah. something else. And, you know, you're yeah. it's the arrogance for me.
Yeah.
And the reason why I bring him up or somebody like him yeah. is because of the arrogance,
yeah.
you know, it's just automatically, because I'm on his side, I think I'm smarter than you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I remember exactly what it was now.
Yeah.
It was talking about Kamala Harris's 25K, you know, for housing.
Okay.
And all that stuff.
Oh,
and,
right.
And I had to remind him, like, you don't walk amongst the normal,
right.
you know, middle class. Like,
right.
I'm like, try to go down to Philadelphia, try to go down to Montgomery County and all mm-hmm. that and understand what's happening in the housing market.
Right.
People are fleeing these areas because, one, they can't keep up with property taxes here. I mm-hmm. see it all the time in Montgomery County. Or, you know, whether it's, and I was trying to explain to him the basic economics of this, where this is going to be disastrous. Right. It's going to be another housing market crash. And, you know, private equity firms are licking their lips right now at what's happening. Like, right,
please.
Now.
Yeah, please. Because
they're just going to keep buying up properties.
Right.
And he doesn't understand. Not majority of the people over here, they don't own their homes. It's private equity. We see these high rise apartment complexes come up every, you know,
right.
You know, dang near every, you know, year or. Or month or
3 months.
I mean, shoot, we're sitting right near Kensington, and there's high rise apartment complexes coming up right after, you know, Cheryl Parker moved out the attics.
Right.
And that was actually before they were moving out the attics. Started seeing the high rise apartments coming.
So I'm glad you brought up, you know, her name, and I'm glad you brought up about, you know, the relocation of attics, or, you know, because I feel like they just, that side of things, they just move poverty. Yeah. They're not trying to solve
it. Yeah, they just move it.
They're not trying to solve the, you know, help the drug addicts. They're not trying to solve Kensington. They just washed it. Yeah. You know what? We're just going to move it, put these new buildings up.
Yeah.
So I see something. I went on your site and I seen it said that, you know, a campaign to restore the fire of American ingenuity.
Yeah.
So when we talk about that, it's a new way of doing things or a new way of accomplishing things, ingenuity or, you know, creativity. So that versus insanity, you know, so insanity, doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
It's to me, it gets back to going back to the basics. It's not a new concept.
Right.
America is the way it is right now because people rolled up their sleeves. They turned wrenches. They did all sorts of things. I'm talking about my campaign's about very much like the, you know, the Henry Fords going back to the old style. Even I would even go back to like the Wright brothers, the invention that, or, you know, the innovative minds that created stuff, manufacturing, getting back to the basics,
right?
You know, opening up our steel, iron, plastics, you name it, putting U.S. stamps back on it, opening up our energy sector, letting the economy work for itself. That's the American ingenuity that I'm talking about is let's get back to the basics.
I feel like that's what the party believes in truly. And I feel like that's the platform that Trump is running on. Yeah. And, you know, anybody in the party altogether, you especially. So the thing is, I feel like the other side has so much hatred for one man. They can't see the pure common sense economics and business and simplicity of it all. Like, let's get back to America first. Yeah. And I think that's
they know exactly what they're doing.
Right.
It's not that they have just the hate for Donald Trump.
Right.
They're big government.
Right.
That is the way that they work. So if Trump was able to succeed and I'm able to succeed at reopening these manufacturing plants and reopening the energy sectors, the populace becomes independent.
Right.
And there goes your city, your county, and all those kind of programs that the Democrats need to keep you in the system.
The government,
it's like the Matrix.
Smaller,
they got to keep you in it. So I'm trying to do the opposite of removing everybody from the Matrix to becoming independent. Because I'm talking about endless amount of trade jobs like that you can just pick up here. And we all know what happened during COVID. Your HVACs, your all those different, you know, high-skilled trades, coding, programming, you name it, they were making 100K plus even in the time of COVID.
Right.
So I'm still trying. That's where I'm trying to push them, you know, the populace, even, the, you know, to our own community, the Black community. I'm trying to get them to become independent from city and county.
Right.
And that's why the Democrats are fighting so hard, because they want to keep you right in there.
I think it's about education. Yeah. And I'm glad that you're speaking like this, because the way we present our stuff, you know, like it hits home and it hits different.
Yeah.
And I think we just hear real quick lines. Yeah. Oh, the Republicans are like, you know, Darth Vader. Yeah. They want to take your programs away. They want to take this away. They want to take that away. But listen, this is what our philosophy is. Yeah. This is what our ideology is. We believe in you.
Yeah, and it's not that we're trying to take it away. It's meant to be used as temporary means to get back up on your feet, not a permanent means, which hurts the economy if people are so reliant on it and it becomes permanent.
Right.
It's meant to be temporary so that we can get you on your feet.
Right.
It's like teaching you how to fish.
Yes.
You know, going back to that old fable,
right.
You know, if I just keep fishing for people, nobody's going to ever learn anything. You got to teach them how to fish to stand on their own.
Forever, right.
Yeah, so they eat forever.
I think that's
it's
important.
The ultimate form of freedom is what we're trying to get people.
You want to empower people. You want to educate people. I think people are people, and we got to take some accountability with this. And that's why we talked about this before the camera started rolling, that it's hard to change Philadelphia because we feel that we're owed something, our people, black people, victim mentality. We don't believe in ourselves. We don't believe we can be great or we can stand on our own. We don't need government that much. You know, of course, everybody needs help, but it's not, like you said, it's not meant for you to be on it forever.
Yeah.
So when you have people who've been living in Section 8 houses for 20 years, 25 years, and they refuse to raise their income or their education level so they can just live, you know, cheaper, then it's, but people have to pay for this.
Yeah.
It's meant for, all right, somebody else's turn. Somebody else needs to help. Short term, get your stuff together, get educated, get a better job, stand on your own too.
Yeah.
You should have pride in that as a people, and we don't have pride in that as a people. So it's not that y'all want to take things away and just leave people in poverty.
Yeah.
I believe in you to be great.
It's the ultimate form of empowerment. It's the same thing that we even talk about in school choice. I mean, you look across the board. I mean, there a lot of these schools, whether it's Philadelphia, even some parts of Montgomery County, you're looking at a literacy rates up to 22%. That's failing your kids. I don't care. You know, Josh Shapiro pumped up, you know, another few billion dollars into our school system.
Right.
Throwing money at the problem isn't going to solve it.
Right.
You know, school choice right now is the best option we have because our kids are our investment. And when you talk about being able to get away from a Section 8 housing, even if you're in foster care, trying to make it out of foster care, like, you know, I got adopted out of that and became successful.
Right.
We need those you know, hand ups, is as I would say, that help. Right. And that's what school choice is because now your family can be able to send you to a school that's going to actually help you get to a 4-year institution if that's the route you want to go.
Right.
You know, get that scholarship you need, or it will get you to, you know, the trade, military, whatever it is in life, but it's going to help you. Why would you tell kids that they have to stay stuck?
Right.
You know, that's where, you know, they have it backwards as Democrats. The Republicans are about opportunity,
right?
Opportunity. We're not going to fix the outcomes,
right?
But we will give you every pathway to that opportunity.
Right, to empower yourself.
Yeah.
I think once I got out the matrix, because I used to be on the other side, and I used to be blind, I used to be emotional. And once I stopped being emotional, you know, especially I think it's important for men to realize they have to learn how to control their emotions. It's important, because I always said that an emotional man is a dangerous man. Not that you're just you don't have any emotions, you just need to learn how to control them.
And the masters of manipulation are Democratic Party.
Yes.
They feed on the worst of human emotions to get their votes. I mean, that's why you see, if you haven't noticed in the last few election cycles, which you can keep going back farther than that, but they don't talk about policy.
Nah.
It's not policy that they talk
it's
about.
It's all emotions,
it's
race.
Emotions, and race, you know, gender. They label everybody. They separate everybody into these different whatever, because they're different voting demographics, so they can hone in on it.
Right.
And then they can weaponize each one of those against their opposition.
I'm glad you spoke about that, right? So, you know, you're a militant man. You was in the military. You was in the Marines. You was in the Army. Yeah. You know, you've done some wonderful things, you know, for mankind and just humans, period. And you served your country. So you're a man of discipline. When you talk about the Democratic Party and their tricks, and you talk about the media and their tricks and their mind games, and they like to keep us mad at, you know, authority.
Yeah.
And that's the authority, they're against you. So I feel like if you want to speak towards this, we'll get CNN or MSNBC, or one of these Democratic or liberal stations. They'll wait for one police officer in the country every 6-7 months. You know, you got idiots in every profession.
Yeah.
I never seen a profession where an idiot didn't work there. Yeah. But somehow, magically, the police officers, they're supposed to have 100%. There's no idiots that work there. Yeah. There are no human people. I have a friend, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to get to the question. I have a friend, closest friend, he is a police officer. So I get to hear the other, like I said, somebody who's actually in it.
Yeah.
I used to be emotional, but once he start, you know, giving me, this is what I got to deal with.
Yeah.
Majority of the job, they're babysitting adults.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're getting the dumbest calls. Yeah. They're getting people that have no accountability, things like that. And they're asked to put their lives on the line in the blink of an eye for people who are ungrateful.
Yeah.
And you never see the Democratic Party. They never inspire police. They never celebrate them. They never big them up.
But unless it's Capitol Police.
Unless it's Capitol Police. Then all of a sudden, now you care about them January 6th.
Yeah.
Right? But they didn't care about the riots when they burnt down the neighborhoods for George Floyd, though.
Yeah.
So the victim mentality, the accountability, the mind games that they play, why, you know, they wait for one idiot to do something. Mm-hmm. I just can't understand it.
I mean, you got to look at the play. Once again, we're looking at Kamala Harris running for president. If you look back in that time frame, it was still Trump's presidency when, you know, you saw the rise of Antifa and BLM and all that. Right. I mean, yes, BLM came out beforehand, 2015, right. Then they came forward. But if you haven't noticed, once again, I go back to the manipulation in the games.
Right.
Where's BLM been at since 2020, since after the election?
Oh, they got exposed.
Well, besides getting exposed, you still had a lot of police brutality incidences or issues. Right. But you notice how they didn't tie it to the president of the United States.
Right.
So once again, it lends to the fact that I believe that BLM was and Antifa was part of a bigger,
right,
you know, Democrat strategy. Because once again, you go on BLM's website, it's got Act Blue.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, they kind of work together to kind of paint this picture that, you know, Trump is a racist. All Republicans are racist. Right. They all hate black people and they all love police brutality. Right. There's not. And I will tell you in that line of profession, because I'm a former police officer myself.
Right.
In that line of profession, nobody hates bad cops more than cops. Like right. We hate bad cops.
Right.
It makes our job tough. And it because we're all about community. Like that's what people don't understand is we got to have that trust and credibility within our community. And, you know, I was working that tough area of Tennessee and to be able to get that, you know, trust and credibility, you can't go around and brutalize your community. Right. The easiest way, you know, we live there, by the way, too.
Right.
You know, if you make arrests, you're going to see, you know, them in a Walmart or you're going to see them in the barbershop.
Right.
So, you know, you got to have like there's this fine line where, you know, you got to enforce all the laws and do what you got to do by the book. And at the same time, you got to have that humanity aspect right. as a police officer. But the Democrats love to paint a broad brush that it's right. just it doesn't suit.
We're never going to win and we're never going to get anywhere. We don't change this mentality. Yeah. So it always starts, you know, it's the one big cycle. Yeah. You got programs that incentivize men not being in a home.
Yeah.
So you got kids growing up without fathers and then they're growing up, getting into the streets and they look to the neighborhood for, you know, some type of father figure.
Yeah.
So then they don't know about authority. So then when they run into authority figures, like, you're telling me to do what? Like, I don't got to listen to you.
And I used to see it in Brooklyn all the time when I was a recruiter.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite spots to go set up, you know, for recruitment was on a, you know, Fulton Mall area. There's an outdoor place where I have three high schools that are in different directions. And I used to watch all the kids go truant, you know, during the day or do everything but. And I used to kind of be that father figure that they didn't have that so you know when I talk about going through brick walls for people I didn't know these kids from Adam but I would walk over to them and say hey you know because thinking about what my parents would have done back in the day because you know they're in their 80s so they're that old school mentality they would have strung that kid up and brought him back to the neighborhood so everybody and their mother would have been you know beating their butts and before you know
you even get
to mom and dad so I kind of did the same mentality where you know And it worked where I would walk up to the kids and say, hey, you know, you need to get back in school, man. This is the crucial years. Your crucial years in high school is going to either make or break you.
Yeah.
And, you know, they would fight me at first, but then I would slowly kind of get to know them enough to get them back to the school. And then I would build relationships with the principals, to the teachers and all that. And some of them ended up joining the Army. Right. Some of them I ended up meeting again. And then they thanked me for getting them out of those situations of Marcy projects.
Right.
Marcy, over there where now.
Hopkins,
Marcy. Now these kids are, you know, now because it's been a few years. Now these kids are like sergeants, staff sergeants. Some of them are. Associate's degrees, bachelor's, some of them switching over to the officer side. So, you know, it's that kind of mentorship that we need to get to the community. And I understand the older generation does not like this new young, you know, wild generation that will pull guns and do whatever, but you still got to have that tough conversation with those kids. Like, this is your future, man. Like, stop skipping school to go smoke weed or do whatever the hell you're doing. Take it, you know, take control of your life.
Right.
And to me, in the end of the day, you know, if somebody does something to me for doing that, man, it is what it is. But I think that's why I'm sent here, you know, to be able to help in that capacity.
I think that's dope. That is important. And they had the courage to do that in the time, like you just said, where kids are bucking back and kids got guns too. Kids not trying to hear it. The youth is not trying to
hear it. I
think
it's the wild Marine in me that's not afraid of all that. So I'm not afraid to have those conversations with those young kids.
Right. My father was a Marine as well. So like, I think my discipline and my strength, it comes like my mom was in the Navy and that's when they met, obviously, whatever. So it's like, I was fortunate enough to grow up with those type of principles and that understanding. And I had that father who was, you know, pay attention to detail and look a man in the eye, firm handshakes, you know, all of that stuff. So I try to implement that on my team, my my peers, the people that surround, the people that believe and follow me. So I think that's why I'm here too. And I think that's why we connected, because I don't know, it's just something like an unspoken thing when men know what the process looked like, or even women who's been in, who grew up in that system or ended up getting into that type of system. So I think that's important. One thing I wanted to ask you about as well, your opponent. Your opponent is Madeline
Dean. Madeline Dean.
Madeline Dean, right? What is the difference between you and her? Like, if you could just talk about some things, so you're, so the people out there can see, like, all right, like I can draw a clear contrast about where he stands and about where she stands.
See, Madeline Dean is just a puppet of the Democrat Party. She's going to vote down, you know, the party, you know, line. The party line. There's no original thought. You know, there's nothing that's real about her. And that's the difference between me and her is. Is if it makes sense for the people,
right?
And it makes sense, you know. I will not necessarily just vote straight down party line. If a Democrat comes out with something that is perfect for the district, makes sense, I'll vote that way, you know. And to me, it's, I don't have a hatred for Democrats or independents or whatever. She has a sincere hatred for Republicans. This woman was an impeachment manager, which helps split this country apart. And that's where there's a difference between me and her is I'm looking at trying to heal this nation and try to bring people together. So you're not going to see me, you know, go and volunteer to become an impeachment manager to, which we already know it's going to split the country back into red versus blue. I'm not going to do certain things like subpoenas and investigations. I'm here to work for the people. And I think that that's where the legislative branch has failed. The Article One branch is not focused on the people. They're focused about their 5 minutes of fame on MSNBC, CNN, and you name it, rather than, okay, how do I fix the inflation? How do I fix the gas prices, groceries? How do I do the things that we are actually getting elected to go and do? You know, we're not here to be an extended branch of the, you know, the executive branch. We're not here to be an extra DOJ. And that's where, as I said, there's a difference is I understand, you know, the sacrifices. I understand the, you know, I'm a normal, you know, 9-to-5 kind of person. I'm not a multimillionaire. You know, and I look at it in that sense is if I'm going through it, everybody here is going through it and I'm going to fix this. So I think, as I said, is I'm very real and genuine, and I'm there to get the work done, not sit here and play games, especially, you know, partisan, you know, hyper-partisan games that split this country apart. Because in the end of the day, it's not about representation of just Republicans. I think that's where, you know, a lot of our leaders fail is they only speak to their party. You're a representative of everyone in your district. So Democrats, Republicans, independents alike, or politically homeless. And you got to find a way to bring them all to the table and do the, do right by all of them. And so that's where I think I'll be the difference maker.
I like that. I like that a lot. I think you're the type of person that'll always come back and do town halls or listen to the people. You seem like they need me there. I need to find out what's going on. I'm staying in tune.
It's very protect. I have this very protective mindset because the way that I look at the people now is like the way that I look at my platoon, my squad, whatever the way you want to look at it. And if somebody messes with one of them, I'm coming down from DC. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those where it's that father figure where, you know, I don't care what it is. I'm going to come down and look at it face to face, or in the opposite where I'm just going to come down randomly, be amongst the businesses, be amongst the residents or whatever. I don't believe my job is to sit there in DC all the time besides the votes and the things I need to do. My job is to keep an eye on here. If I can't see what's going on here, how can I effectively lead? I'm relying on some staff member. I'm relying on somebody else. But I got to get eyes on the
issue. You need to feel it. You need to touch it. I need to feel it. Smell it.
I need to see the issue, feel the issue, so we can sit down and bring those in and see a way to fix it.
Okay. One of the final things that I want to ask you and talk to you about, because, you know, my father's like a he's a Democrat. You know, I became Republican. So me and him, we be having, I try to stay off these talk because these family, it divides family. It messes up really. So, you know, lately I'm like, let's just talk about sports. So, but he's always talking to me about character and Trump's character and just things. And then, I mean, you being the man that you are, the militant man that you are, the background that you have. And one of his biggest things, his gripes, is January 6th and, you know, the Constitution and all of that. So how do you feel about January 6th? How do you feel about those those Capitol Police that went through what they went through, and then still being in on this party, still supporting this party's ideas and things like that. Like, how do you feel about that with your background being in the military?
I mean, you got to once again take a 30,000 foot view of why January 6th happened. It's because the government failed the people once again. Mm-hmm. So you got to go all the way back to 2016, where I believe there was no clear, peaceful transfer of power, because the Democrats were already moving to, Russian collusion, Ukraine. You've seen all these different things. They divided the country so much,
right,
to where there was that heightened state of emotions from the Republicans, that why would they believe the results of 2020 when you lied to them about Russia, you lied to them about the Steele dossier, you lied to them about Ukraine, you lied to them so much. And this is where, as I said, our government has it backwards.
Right.
Where I've never seen the government pull the, we were so scared and we did this and we did that. You did that to the people.
Right.
That legislative branch did all of that.
Right.
They're the ones that introduced the Steele dossier to the FISA court and held all those hearings and did all that to the people on mainstream television, divided the country, and they didn't think that something like J6 would happen.
Right.
But in the sense, do I think it was an insurrection? No. I being a former police officer during that BLM riot time, I saw it as no different than that. It was a, first of all, a peaceful protest that turned violent, and those who committed crimes should have been prosecuted. I agree with that.
Okay.
But in the sense of insurrection, that's not an insurrection.
Right.
I was in Iraq during what I would consider an insurrection, where, the whole Saddam, after Saddam and those elections, they were trying to jail each other's political opponents, as we see now,
right,
trying to murder each other. This is not an insurrection.
Okay.
This was people being frustrated to the point where they just needed to get their voices out, because imagine going through 4 years like that. I mean, Trump's still going through that.
Right.
I mean, that tells you the character of the man. If we really want to be honest, the constant attacks for 8-9 years, and this man is still standing, still getting out, trying to lead this country. And that shows me an unconditional love for this country, regardless of how bad or what they do to him.
Right.
He still has a love for the country, and that tells me that I'm on the right path of somebody like that, versus, you get these, corporate, bred for politics kind of people like Kamala and Joe Biden. It's a fake love, because it's about money, it's about greed, it's about power. To him, it's not about power. Trump is a very powerful person. Why does he need to keep, you know what I'm saying? He's a multi-billionaire. He could just sit there and do whatever he wants, but it's about a true love of America to me.
Okay.
So, I mean, I always love when people bring up his character, but I'm like, you try going through the same amount of lawfare that he went through, going through the same amount of everyday bashing him.
How would you respond?
How would you respond? Right. And he still tries to fix America. Says enough to me about him.
I think that's a good way to mic drop it. If you wanted to leave, a quick message to the people who, tell them why they should vote for you.
Yeah.
You want to talk to the people real quick, and, the time is yours.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I want to say is we have a choice to make in November. And the choice comes down to, do we really, really want change in the sense of we have high inflation, we have, just the economy is in shambles. We got a divided country. We got all this stuff going on. If they really want change, you got to vote differently. You got to vote a different pattern. I mean, you can't just keep going with the same people, and that's the definition of insanity. It's insanity. So, give the young torchbearers the shot, and we will prove to you guys that we can bring, this country together and get the country on the right track. And that's what I'm about.
I want to help with that. Let's do that. I don't even want this to be like our last time talking, because there's other things that I wanted to dive into with you. We didn't even get into inflation. We didn't even get into certain other topics that I'm pretty sure you want to get that message out.
Yeah.
So we will have you back way before we get to November. Yeah. So this was like a great first time doing this. So guys, please like, subscribe, share, and make sure you come out and vote. This is the most important election, at least in my lifetime. Okay. So you guys just do something different, think differently, open your mind, unplug from the matrix. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is episode 28, What You Scared to Say podcast, season 3.
All right.